Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me, as usual, at the studios of CBS Interactive, Scott Rohde of PR agency House Party.
Hi, Tim.
And our guest today, Kim McKay of Click Communications.
Hello, gents.
This week, Photon's disastrous numbers, Fairfax's content theft, in TV, Underbelly goes out on a high, and Jeremy Clarkson's a disaster for Nine. Another new Combank ad, and it's okay to tease the Rangers. Triple M with a little help from Slash. Social media wins at Cannes again. But first we turn to Kim from Click Communications. Thank you very much for joining us, Kim. I guess one of the things that sort of, if I was trying to sort of pick out what it is about that makes Click a little bit different, it would be that you guys probably bridge the gap between PR and social media a little bit more than most. Is that the thing that you think distinguishes your agency? Or?
I would love to believe so, and hearing that from you is wonderful. We started Click, we're about to celebrate our second birthday, and it was always with a view that everything will become about being online. That's where the name Click comes from, and we're all come from a traditional PR background, and we use that skill set knowing that the communications channels have changed, and we're moving that into social media.
So, and what made you start the agency in the first place?
The fact that I was in corporate and I had great agencies who were brilliant at getting me TV, print and radio. Not one of them could understand SEO and how to help my Google rankings and, in fact, drive a conversation online. So, and because it was something I was passionate about, it just seemed like a timely thing to do.
And there are some that would still say that's the role of a digital agency. And
there are some that would.
Should meet. Scott, I guess you come from a kind of similar camp, really.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, my background is I was in traditional PR, but I suppose the first agency I started with, Network PR, you know, 5 years ago, we were doing digital PR at the time. And we did Australia's first survey about online media habits and that kind of stuff. And I suppose I learned that it's not so much about being online or being offline, it's about having a strategy that will work anywhere.
So are you two rivals? Have you found yourselves on the same pitch list yet?
No,
we haven't
each
yet.
Other as rivals.
And but we share a very similar philosophy.
Yeah.
And
we are working together.
We
on
are
some
working
things.
Together on side projects, so we might even be able to announce it here one day.
Okay, well you can announce it today if you like.
No.
Scott won't let me.
we've talked about this before in the Mumbo report, so we won't spend too much time on it, but it's probably just worth mentioning Scotty got a job. For people who don't remember that,
it's an office job.
Scotty got an Aussie job, wasn't it, when he came
yes.
over here? So it's probably just worth explaining what that idea was.
Absolutely. Again, through the power of Twitter, I came across this guy who thoroughly entertained me, and every Tuesday was a new episode, and I'd rally the troops and we'd watch it.
And this was basically just him and his pranks in his workaday
his
life.
His pranks, how much personal grooming he could get away with in his cubicle. I just found it hilarious. And then through the medium of Twitter, I just felt a lot more comfortable about reaching out to someone I'd never met before, and we did. And then in a few short months after that, we had him sitting in Click filming season three, Scotty Got an Aussie Job, and right now we're sort of working up treatments and script ideas for season four.
So he's back in the US now.
He's back in the US, and he really has a job. He's employed by Click Communications, and he is doing what we call sort of Click Digital Labs, and things that we're sort of testing, HTML5, iPhone app, augmented reality. He's got a great little budget to play with that so that we can kind of use before we set loose and sort of start charging clients for that.
And he'll be your spearhead into a US office.
That's the plan, correct.
And how far down the line are you with that?
We are down the research road. I've had one trip to the US. I'll plan another. That's something, you can't do lightly. The plan is to do it next year, and it's about finding the right people and the right clients, so it'll be when it's right, not just for the sake of it.
Now, again, another piece of fun that you had was Brian, the social media guru. So this was just a piece of fun, sort of a kind of fake Twitter expert, I suppose, who you uploaded the video onto YouTube. What is your take on social media experts?
Look, similar,
like Brian,
that idea, I guess, came from us thinking of ways to promote our business. How can we? And we started with our own kind of, this is what we're great at, we can do this. And we couldn't take it seriously. So that's how the Brian idea evolved. We've had, as publicists, the last person people we can generally promote is ourselves. So the Brian idea came around that way. What's the best way to promote ourselves, which was laugh at ourselves.
I detected a slight hint of cynicism about social media gurus, though.
Yeah.
It's funny because yesterday was obviously Social Media Day, Mashable Social Media Day. And I noticed a lot of on the Twitter feeds was people saying about how Smegs, a social media guru, you know, this... And it's a running joke about them. And, you know, personally, my opinion on Social Media Day was it's a complete waste of time. I think why should social media have a day if PR doesn't have a day, if comms doesn't have a day, if ad doesn't have a day? You know, it's one of those things. I mean, what's so special about social media that needs a day? Look, I work in it. It's a channel. But it doesn't deserve its own day. It's just a bit egotistical. And, you know, I didn't go along to the Sydney event because I just didn't think it was worth a while.
I'm all for celebrating. So if people want to have a day... go for it.
Yeah, but every day is social media. I mean, social media is 24/7. Social media is every day, every minute, every second, every year. You know, that's my opinion on it.
Well, next we'll talk Photon's woes. Now, last week we mentioned Photon's problems. Now we're beginning to get a picture of just how bad they are, coming clean to the ASX about its relatively disastrous finances. What at one point could have claimed to be Australia's biggest media and marketing group is now under... a mountain of debt. I mean, I got my hands on the update to the market when it was kind of sent through, and your jaw drops as you're reading it through. And the thing is, you read it in this financial language, and it doesn't sound so bad. But then it's okay. So the chairman has stepped down, not just becoming a non-exec chairman, but just becoming a director. They owe $176 million in earnouts to all the people who, you know, they bought the agencies off them, and then they've carried on hitting their numbers, so they're going to have to pay them. So they're now asking them to take shares instead. 50 jobs cut already, writing down the value, owing the banks $271 million. So there are big problems there. Now, one of the things that really strikes me is the fact that they're trying to renegotiate with the owners, these people who built up their own agencies over a long time, then sold out, obviously got some cash up front, some, you know, say 3 years down the line, depending on how they did the numbers. Now, the story with Blue Freeway was the whole thing imploded. A lot of people had taken shares. When it went bad, you know, it turned out a lot of people had effectively given away their agencies for very little. Now, Kim, you're in the position that one day, presumably, your agency will be at a scale that you'll start getting offers. Would you ever sell to a holding group, or as an owner, what would your conditions of selling be?
In short, would I sell? Yes. In terms of conditions, I would. From what I've heard about what Photon did to agencies, was just set these sales targets, and these agencies, the heart and soul was ripped out of them. The owners just became sales machines, and it was all about these sales targets. So I definitely wouldn't do that. If they want the best out of a business, obviously that isn't the best way, and I think that's been proven. So the conditions would be about creating and continuing Click, you know, with the passion that it has. So it'd have to be around that, and nothing that would deplete that.
And would you take cash or shares?
Cash.
Cold, hard cash.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? Because the number of times you hear it, you know, I can think of a big digital agency, and it's probably not fair to mention which one, although people can probably work it out, where, you know, certainly the story would go that once the founders sold and they had to carry on doing the numbers over 3 years in order to get their payout, it just became all about that rather than planning for the long
term.
And
we know that businesses our size are about the passion and the culture, and the minute that's kind of raped is a strong word, but the minute that's diminished, you know, it's gone.
From what I've heard, I mean, the Photon, a lot of people I've known that works at Photon companies, they're just miserable because it just churn and burn. And that's not the best way to run an agency at all, you know.
It's the worst way to run an agency.
If your staff are happy and you treat them with respect, then you're going to do well.
Well, the other thing that amused me about the situation was when I was writing the story, one of the many photo companies that really dragged them down was Geekversity, which was a get-rich-quick on the internet scheme, which my spell checker insisted was actually called Graveside.
I thought it interesting that they were offloading the internet and e-commerce divisions. Like, that was seen.
Yes, yes, I think some of that is partly it's a reshuffle. So there were these five divisions of which internet and e-commerce was one. So they're now reshuffling it into Australian agencies, other stuff, in Australian and international. So it's not as if all of those internet companies will, they won't all get offloaded, but they've already closed Future House, which I think is the smoking remains of what used to be Geekdom, which was the sort of sister company to Geekversity. And there was also, I think, iMega was the other one where there've been, you know, certainly by the looks of it, you know, big problems. So the issue, and looking at the comments thread, seems to be very much around, did the management truly understand the companies that they were buying?
Yeah.
And also, is it an argument about being a specialist or a generalist, you know, and big isn't always best, you know?
Next up, we talk content theft. So this week on Mumbrella, we posted a story about Fairfax, and I used fairly mean phrases, I suppose. I said stealing content. Now they did eventually respond and say that they were changing their methods. So a bit of background: Fairfax, I would say, are one of the more forward-thinking digital companies when it comes to video content. They've spotted its potential. They've spotted the fact that there's a hunger in the market to play video ads. So there are people who realise that you can actually reach an audience with TV ads much more cheaply if you do them as pre-roll.
Is there a viewership who actually wants to watch those ads? You're reading a newspaper online. The last thing you want to do is have an ad shoved in. I'll rephrase that. Last thing you want is an autoplay ad shoved down your throat.
Yeah, that's a slightly different issue, isn't it? Because, yes, Fairfax are very, very guilty of autoplay. So you will often, you'll land on the site and then, you know, you'll see the subtle little message, this video will start playing in 10 seconds and then it counts down. And whether you like it or not, you're then served a video.
I can read stories in under 10 seconds now before I click away.
But leaving aside autoplay, which I totally agree they should get rid of, what they have been good at is recognising that there's a hunger from the advertisers for that content. But the issue that I've had is often what they'll do is say they're writing about a piece that's been a big hit on YouTube. Rather than just embedding YouTube, which they can, they'll lift it from YouTube and put it into their own player and serve an ad against it. Which, to me, there's maybe some sort of legal fair dealing defence, but doesn't seem morally justifiable.
No, but let's be honest here. Newspapers have been stealing content for years, not just video. You look at any story involving anybody who's been, you know, attacked or something like that. If they can grab a Facebook picture, they'll run the Facebook picture. And let's be honest here, they don't own the copyright on that picture. If somebody tried to use one of their images, they would sue. And, you know, I've worked for newspapers. I've seen what picture editors and news editors are willing to do. If they get a picture from someone and there's been no deal set, then they go, yeah, there's $20, there's $40. A lot of time they'll just steal the pictures.
It's fair dealing, though, isn't it, to a certain extent? You know, say you talk about the example of a picture from Facebook or something like
Facebook's
that.
Facebook's a closed network, though. You know, you've not authorised somebody to use that image. That image is not actually in the public domain, even though it's on the web. And I think that they have no right to drop into your Facebook pictures and steal your images. By copyright law, they do not have, not even under copyright law, they are not allowed to take your picture and use it, even with fair use.
Now, it's not been tested properly, has it?
Yeah,
it hasn't. As far as I know, because that's always been the debate.
Well, nobody can afford to go against them.
Well, I suppose that the test will come sooner or later, won't it?
I hope
so. Now, is it any different to the journalist on a door knock of, you know, days of yore, or probably still even now, you know, sort of popping in and having a chat to the family, and, you know, while they're in there, the photographer taking a picture of taking a photo of the photo on the mantelpiece, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a photo of a photo, which is legal. And I've got to admit, I've never been in a room with a photographer that's ever done that.
So have you ever had to do a door knock and walk away with a picture?
I've done about 400 door knocks, death knocks as we used to call them if it was somebody killed. I've probably done about 400 of them, and yeah, I've done lots where I've got the picture. I've done other ones where I haven't been able to get the picture and I've had to go back and say, look, I can't get this image, and they've said, well, find friends. Go out and get someone who has a picture of them.
Now, in fairness to Fairfax, after we raised the issue, they responded and have said they've actually taken down a number of videos and reminded the staff of their rules on fair dealing, which are effectively, if they're doing something to the videos, editing it, adding value, then it would go into the Fairfax player. And if they can get permission of the person who created the content, then they'll put it in the Fairfax player. Otherwise, they'll embed from the host, which...
Embedding's fine. I think that what it sounds like they're going to do is just basically do an intro themselves and then run the video and embed it anyway and run the ad.
Well, if it's embedded from the YouTube player...
No, what I mean is they'll probably just run an intro into it like a TV news would do, and then they can use the piece and then still have the ad.
And that becomes the argument of fair dealing then, you know. So and I guess it almost becomes, you know, whether it's added value for the viewer.
Not if they don't link to the viewer. No, it's added value for the viewer, but... Unless they link, because they don't have a good link strategy either. They don't link to, when they steal a story off a blog or a website, they never link to it, you know?
Yeah, do you know, it's funny because I, you know, as someone who's got a site, I sort of have my own views. Because now, you know, every now and then we'll get a mention.
Yeah.
Now, I've actually got a feeling it's not cynical sometimes. So, for instance, say we run a story and then the Daily Telegraph runs it and credits Umbrella, you know, mentions us in the third part, and sometimes they're very good about doing that. In the online edition, there won't usually be a link.
Yeah.
But I think that's just because it's a print journalist who's written it and it's just somebody else processing it.
It's not hyperlinked, you know, but there needs to be a process now where if that story is run from somewhere, you should be crediting it.
Well, Kim, we sort of rambled away a bit from the
jump in or tell me anything.
Well, I just thought, the word theft was really strong when I read your headline. I'm not saying it isn't, but it was just really strong language. So I did sort of read the article, so that worked. But
yes, Umbrella, never knowingly underhyped.
I just sort of found it, for me, it was the hypocrisy of, you know, Fairfax just taking stuff, but also in one hand they're always figuring out a way for people to pay for their content and trying to monetize their own business, but they were quite quick to take someone else's.
And I suppose, yes, feeling angry about the aggregators as many of the traditional sort of media owners.
Yeah, but credit to them, they did sort of fix it within hours. So
yeah, that was nice. I was impressed at the speed at which they moved at that one.
Yeah.
Next we talk TV ratings. Well, the third season of Underbelly bowed out with 1.8 million viewers on Sunday. Nine's new Rescue Special Ops and Top Gear reruns pulled in a much less than stellar audience this week. Rescue Special Flops was the headline I came up with, which I was I was quite fond of in a childish way. Kim, what are your TV watching habits?
I used to be embarrassed to admit, but now I say it proud that I am actually addicted to television. I watch a little of everything and I watch a lot of television.
Nothing wrong with that. We had the Mumbrella Media Metrics Masterclass in Melbourne this week. Lots of M's there. And Nick Durant from Mindshare, his partner at The Exchange, was unashamedly just on stage saying, you know, I love telly. And he was talking about that, I think we called it Ratings Mega Week when we talked about it a few weeks back when everything new came. He said he didn't go out all week, he just watched television. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't. And you just, you know...
Obviously, there are grumps like Scott.
This is kind of how Scott and I met, in a way. I think I tweeted something about something I was watching on television and then a conversation happened.
It's worth mentioning what your Twitter handle is.
Oh, Red Shoes.
At Red Shoes.
At Red Shoes. And I'm rebranding. I'm wearing black shoes right now.
That's all, yeah.
Yeah, so, your TV watching habits. What are your favourite shows?
My favourite shows aren't on TV right now. Mad Men, The Wire. I get sucked into True Blood.
You're very HBO, aren't
you? I am all about HBO. Yeah.
Yes, or they tend to be on Showcase over here,
Showcase,
don't they?
Showcase, Movie Network have Mad Men. Mm-hmm. But I can watch The Tudors. I can watch The Hills. I can watch The City. I can watch The Bachelor.
So, MasterChef, have you been a MasterChef watcher at all?
I have in the past, but now I watch it on Twitter. So I'll watch something else and I'll watch MasterChef via the
tweet
stream.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Because I don't need to watch it.
Because everybody's talking about it anyway.
It becomes a participative thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Obviously, one of the big challenges for the networks then is the time difference.
Yeah.
You know, say you're in Perth, you're a few hours behind. You have to stay off Twitter, otherwise you're going to know who's been evicted.
But one of my best TV experiences was the first season of MasterChef and watching it, and I felt like I was in my lounge room with 12 friends because we were sort of all chatting about it as it was happening.
Yes, a bad TV watching experience can be much improved with Twitter. Something like the Logies is great fun.
Brilliant.
To watch with Twitter as everyone's putting the boot in.
Go Will Anderson.
The year before
the football's
last.
Great.
Yeah.
The football's great when everybody's on Twitter.
Yeah.
Watching the World Cup because everybody's just going nuts for different
it's
stuff.
It's too stressful to be on Twitter when the football was on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that because England got hammered this week? Destroyed?
Yeah.
Kicked out of the World Cup?
A good
annihilated?
Way. That was not... No wonder I'm so tired this week. That was how my week started. Yes, being up until 2 a.m. and then going home
fantastic
in misery.
Fantastic game. That was amazing watching the German... defence, midfield and attack slice open every bit of the English
You're talking, yeah. I'm sitting here knowing.
Me too.
That,
my eyes have just rolled in back of my head.
Yeah, but I'm sitting here knowing that no one's going to hear Scott's words because I'm going to edit them out later, probably. Anyway.
Yeah, don't lie.
Back to TV ratings.
Can I ask a TV question?
Yes, ask a TV
question. Can you remember the last time you went into an office or a work situation the following day and everyone talked about something they watched the night before? Because I find now that people have IQ'd something, recorded something, watched it at different times. For me, the last time I can remember that old water cooler conversation was Seinfeld.
Yes. Or actually, in fairness, MasterChef did do that, particularly after the final, you know, sort of last time around.
So people would go in the next day and talk about it.
Yes, and everyone was talking about it.
So I guess other than Idol and MasterChef, so those big finales and sport, I can't think of sort of TV shows where
The moment's gone, really.
Everybody's.
We watch it in our own time.
Yeah. We do. Do you know, it's funny because I finally caught Media Watch this week a day late because I've been away on the Monday night. And I came and wanted to talk to everyone the next morning about it. And then thinking, well, actually, no, they didn't watch it last night, did they? You know, it was a good episode, by the way. They very much skewered their own broadcast of the ABC for the way that they'd missed so many opportunities with coverage of the rise of Julia Gillard and the fall of Kevin Rudd sort of at the end of last week. One more just on ratings, which is just worth noting. There was a sort of interesting strategy, I guess, for Nine. There was a very big night's viewing with Seven's Packed to the Rafters returned and MasterChef was on as well. So we saw 1.9 million for Seven, nearly one put for Rafters, nearly 1.9 million for MasterChef as well. So I don't know if this was just an absolute sort of white flag of surrender from Nine or whether they thought it would do better, but they kind of had almost a Jeremy Clarkson themed night where they had episode of Top Gear followed by Who Do You Think You Are, Jeremy Clarkson presenter.
Well, I think bad idea on there. I mean, number one is you're choosing series 11 Top Gear, right? Season 15 just aired in the UK last week, so you know you're airing 4-year-old TV and then you're showing like a 6-year-old interview with a guy. I mean, that's not the way to do it. People want fresh content. They don't want content. Most people have seen Top Gear, will have seen that episode.
I suppose the challenge for Nine is when you're up against those super strong shows, you know, you'll know that MasterChef is only a few, you know, not long away from going, you know, your audience is elsewhere. Why not burn an old episode?
Throw some comedy up or something, don't?
Well, they certainly did.
Top Gear is one of those shows where it's topical on the cars of the time.
Well, they did do two episodes of Two and a Half Men, so there was
I don't know if that's comedy, let's be honest here.
At least we're not back in those dark days of last year. I think there was a couple of nights a week where there were three episodes of Two and a Half Men.
But I think my problem there is, you know, Top Gear is a topical show. You're looking at cars. If you're looking at a car from 4 years ago, people who like cars aren't going to be interested in it. They're going to go, well, you know, that's 4 years ago's Lamborghini Gallardo. I'm bored now. I've seen this show and I know all about the car. They've brought out three new models since then.
Sure Nine didn't do it to fail, though.
No, that's the thing, isn't it? Well,
I'd be great if they did, wouldn't
I? I wonder if they did it pragmatically, though, knowing they were going to lose the night anyway, so they might as well, you know.
Or perhaps they just thought the whole female audience was with, you know, the Rafters, and they would try whatever they could to just get the eyeballs they could that night, perhaps.
And it's going to be very interesting to see how Rafters goes once MasterChef's finished as well, because you can see that being the other side of 2 million then. Do you watch the Rafters?
I have it to watch. I haven't watched it yet.
And previous series?
Absolutely, yeah.
Next up, we talk new ads. Now, CommBank has released another new ad and it's stylized black and white series. Let's take a clip.
We open on a Melbourne woman in the garden of a lovely home. She has received a promise that a banker will actually call her back. The phone rings dramatically. Understandably, the call throws her into deep shock. Commonwealth Bank employees rush to her aid. Providing proof we'll return calls when we say we will. Promise. Maybe that's why we have more satisfied customers than any bank in Australia. A neighbour who hasn't enjoyed such service from her bank would like to. Service that pleases and possibly astonishes. Our theme line, and now the logo, just another day in the garden.
So what do you reckon, Scott?
Crap.
That's pretty harsh.
No, actually, I'll take it back. Actually,
that's very harsh.
Do you know what? I just don't. That just doesn't make me want to use Commonwealth Bank.
Are you a fan of the director Jean-Pierre Jeunet?
I love Amelie, and I also went to see Micmac's Ill in the Year, which he did, which was superb, and I advise anyone to go see it. Love his movies. Not a big fan of his directorial for the Commonwealth Bank.
Kim,
I'm not a fan either.
How did you feel about the previous incarnation, the crazy American ad agency?
Look, I didn't mind those. I didn't hate them. People recognise things they've never seen before. I hadn't seen that before in an ad, just personally. Maybe it had been done. So it would cut through for me. Didn't make me want to bank Commonwealth, but as an ad, I noticed it.
Yeah, I suppose that's the challenge. It's the noticing thing, mm-hmm. isn't it? Because, for instance, I remember just stumbling on YouTube. They just uploaded it to the Combank YouTube channel 2 Fridays ago, and that was how I saw it for the first time. We were very much... You're thinking, OK, I'm going to consciously watch this ad and react to it. And actually, I think that's one of the reasons why, in some ways, criticism of ads is a bit invalid, because you're never seeing them in the wild like they're meant to be. But I have noticed since... I've been at home a couple of times, and the ad has really stood out in the
But here's my thing. They're quite intelligent ads. That's probably the best way I could say it. And you know my stance on a lot of TV viewers...
Yes, you're very dismissive and snobbish.
Yeah, I'm not snobbish. I'm just like that most people that watch TV are kind of...
I think they just lack any emotional connection. We're talking about the new ads now, aren't we?
I think that's what I think. And I think your average person who watches TV will not connect with them.
Actually, one comment that's been made a few times on our comment thread is the slightly postmodern references, you know, and cut to the logo and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
What's the justification?
I have no idea. They probably just want the logo in. Somebody said, why is the logo not in? Get the logo in. And then they've shoved it in anywhere they can. Maybe they should have thought about that in the first place. And you know,
I consistently have an issue with their tagline. Is it determined to be different? I can't help but think that that is for the thousands of Commonwealth Bank employees as a sort of internal message. It's the best way to get them. It actually does not resonate with any bank customer.
Just a bank that makes billions a year profit.
I don't need my bank to be different, and I don't need them to be determined to be different.
Yeah, I want them to just cut their fees.
Yeah, different to what?
Another ad conversation in a moment, but first a word from our sponsor, because it would seem that we're working for Merrick Dawes and Ricky Lee.
Game Umbrella, Merrick here for Merrick Dawes and Ricky Lee on Nova 969. This month, we're giving our listeners a chance to take home a slice of our $250,000 ad budget. They just have to show us what they do to promote our show. But we had a little leftover cash in the bank, so we decided to involve our media agencies. You could win $100,000 worth of national airtime on the Nova network for your charity client if you pledge an idea that best promotes us. $100,000 airtime. That's like 4 of my live reads. There's also $10,000 for the winning team, cash. Entries close 16th of July. Check out mumbrella.com.au/Nova. I'll do it less for cash, personally.
So, do you remember this ad?
Every time you use a mobile phone whilst driving, a redhead gets its wings. Don't be a dickhead. Don't use your phone.
A redhead may or may not get wings.
So that was one of Vic Rhodes' controversial safety campaign ads, which took a mild swipe at people with red hair. It was looked at a while back by the Advertising Standards Bureau, and nobody much reported the verdict. And I was actually on the Ad Standards Bureau looking for something else, and just came across it. It'd been sitting there for 3 or 4 weeks without anyone having written about it.
They're seeing journalism, investigative journalism, still going strong in Umbrella.
It is. Well, I was going to get to this in a minute, but I'll tell you now. As we were recording this on a Thursday, I went back to the Ad Standards Bureau website at about 5 o'clock last night, and I finally left the office at 12:30, having read every single one of the verdicts they've come up recently.
And you tell your partner's not in the country at the moment.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, that probably is a factor. But it's hilarious. Look, there's a website in the UK called Holy Moly, which is like a weekly kind of gossipy email. And they've got a section called Duty Log Mental, which is just a sort of verbatim record of the complaints that viewers ring in with about a particular show, you know, where the person rings up and they think EastEnders is real and they're offended or whatever. Looking at some of the complaints that the ASB has to deal with, you feel so sorry for them and you so admire their diplomacy. Because the thing is, you know, I'm sorry to say, a proportion of the public are mad.
Isn't that what I've been trying to tell you about TV viewers for a while now?
Yeah, a proportion, you know, and I'm not saying that the majority of the public are mad, but certainly there are a number of calls where you can see that the problem in that person's life is not the ad.
No, it's their mental state.
You know, there was one that it was they saw a spider in an ad and they cried for the rest of the day and missed lots of appointments. Or there was another one who was out on a motorbike and saw an outdoor poster and it made him feel faint and he wanted to go and have a lie down. And so it goes on. So they have a tough job. And actually, and the thing is, they're very, very diplomatic in how they write their responses to these things. But the point is, this is the price of self-regulation. The industry keeps self-regulation. They have to spend money dealing with these complaints, you know, funding the ASB. Each time one of these complaints come in, the agency or the advertiser has to put somebody probably quite senior and spend a day responding to the complaint.
Yeah, it's a bit bizarre, isn't it?
So I'm not sure what the solution is, but yeah, it's been comical.
Take the idiots away from TV.
But how do you feel, but going back to this one, this was one
the
that was cleared. This was the Don't Be a Dickhead campaign. So there were issues around the use of that terminology, which the ruling was because it was online, you know, it was a sort of slightly younger audience it was aimed at. That was acceptable. And it teased redheads. Is that all right? Is that okay to tease redheads?
Well, look, I when I grow my beard, I get bits of red in it, to be honest. I think, you know, if it was an advert, you know, attacking someone's colour, or it was an advert attacking someone's sex, then it would be discriminatory, you know. And I think if it's an advert attacking someone's hair colour, then it's also discriminatory.
Kim?
I read the response, and I guess they've sort of said, we don't see having red hair as a disability. What else could they do? They couldn't say having red hair is a disability, so we're taking the ad off. So they kind of had to say that. But the bigger question is making fun or this stereotypical response going to make someone put their mobile phone down? I don't think so either,
yeah.
So it's sort of
similar to the whole, you know, pinky, you've got a small penis type thing.
Question is, though, was it a good PR tactic? Because it was much talked about. Those ads got played on mainstream television because of their controversy level.
Fantastic.
Didn't have to pay a single dollar
PR,
in media.
Great PR,
You know, if it doesn't stop a single person using a mobile phone, then it's a failure.
It starts the conversation, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to stop using their mobile phones.
And I guess more of the conversation has been about are we allowed to say Ranger? No.
Yeah, that's just it. The conversation's about that and not the driving and the mobile. So is that wrong? Are you focusing on the wrong thing there?
It was interesting, actually, mentioning Rangers. It would be amazing how many complaints there are. It's touching an issue. So, you know, I came across three just where there were complaints. For instance, the ANZ, Barbara the bank manager, someone who complained the fact that Barbara the bank manager has red hair, therefore shows people with red hair as being, you know, stupid. And then there was a cuppa soup ad where it was, you know, different kind of, you know, mugs being given out in the office, and there was someone with red hair and the label on the mug said Ginger Ninja. So there was a complaint about that as well. So there is a rising tide of people with red hair who do feel discriminated against.
I think blondes have had it for so long and they've handled it beautifully. The Ranger should take a lesson.
Sorry, I can resist. Blonde joke, sorry. Take it back.
Next, Dr. Dan returns. So Triple M is bringing back an old favourite, maybe slightly modernised. Dr. Dan was the staple of the Triple M sound throughout the 80s and 90s, being played as you heard there. That was Slash playing that. So that was played for the first time to the Triple M audience this week. And as we're talking this coming weekend, the TV ad will go to air on Sunday to accompany it. Scott, fan?
What happened to Slash? That's all I'm going to say. Really, at what point in your career does that happen?
I don't know. I see it as a bit of a marketing coup for Triple M.
Oh, I think it is a great marketing coup for them. Well done to them. Kudos. But, yeah.
One of my first jobs was Triple M back in the day when Guy Dobson was heading up Triple M in Brisbane. And we had, it was Dr. Dan days, and we all had the Dr. Dan denim jackets. And I think that, you know, Triple M's changed a lot over the years. It's been sport for a time, comedy, etc. If they have a heritage in rock, they can go back to it, and I, you know, wish them all the luck. They've got a heritage and they can uniquely own this proposition, hopefully.
OK, we're beginning to run tight on time, actually. So next we'll talk social media and Cannes. Now, if there was one thing that got everybody excited at the Cannes Lions this year, it was social media. We talked about it a little bit last week. But then one of the most prestigious awards, the Titanium, or as somebody suggested, Twitanium, was given for, a Twitter initiative. So the Best Buy, big US retailer, their campaign, Twelp Force, which was Crispin Porter-Bogusky, which is a great advertising agency in the US.
Terrible name, though.
Well, they can't help their names, can they?
No, Twelp Force, I mean.
Twelp Force, well...
I'm sick of everyone being with Twitter having a TW on it.
Yes, no, I am kind of with you there, actually. Effectively, Titanium is you're basically saying this was the best single piece of communication thinking of the year. Would you agree?
If I say yes, you're going to go, okay, why? If you say no, you're going to say, well, what was the best one? And I'm not quite sure what the best one was. But no, I don't think it was the best. I think it was a good idea. I think going out and... helping people out, and even if they didn't want the help, if they just put a query out to nobody and then they jump in and help out, great idea.
Is it any different to what Telstra or Optus or anybody like that is doing?
Well, I think so, because they were answering questions that, it wasn't just part of a single network or that kind of thing. They were helping out people with random queries, that kind of stuff, which was good. I think they answered 22,000 tweets came in, and they got 24,000 followers, and they had 2,000 people got blue shirts who were just... hammering, if they've 24/7, if there's a question out there, they'd try and answer it. Good idea, yeah. I don't know if it was the single best piece of communication last year.
Kim?
No, customer service is a great idea, and that's all this is. Yeah. I don't see it as an award winning.
Yeah, at all. It's customer service, rather than communicate, part of communications, but it's not a large thing. I think they got good PR out of it, which is good, but. Best piece of communication last year? Nah, I'm not sold on it.
Well, on that slightly negative note, that's where we have to leave it for today. Thank you very much to my co-host, Scott Rohde.
Thanks, Tim.
And to our guest, Kim.
Thank you.
Thank you also to CBS Interactive for use of their studios. Production was by Georgina Pearson. That was the Mumbrella Cast. Toodle-pip.